Before we get started, you already know about The Low Post with Zach Lowe and The Hoop Collective featuring Brian Windhorst. But have you listened to The VC Show with 8-time NBA All-Star Vince Carter and co-host Roz Gold on Wude? They talk all things basketball with some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment and give their unfiltered thoughts on the NBA. Plus, Vince will share stories from his illustrious 22-year career. That's The VC Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast.
We just confirmed the coaches for season 31 of The Ultimate Fighter. Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler will go head-to-head as the coaches of The Ultimate Fighter, Team McGregor versus Team Chandler. This season premieres Tuesday, May 30th and runs through Tuesday, August 15th on ESPN The Network and ESPN Plus.
Boom. There you have it. Announced Team Chandler versus Team McGregor on The Ultimate Fighter. And then fighting later this year. Conor was the fight that I wanted. Conor has expressed interest in wanting to fight me. And now here we are. I want to win this thing. I don't just want to beat Conor later this year whenever the fight happens. I want to beat Conor badly on tough. I don't even want him to win a fight. I still got one dude on my mind. Conor McGregor. Heading to Vegas, baby.
What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's my guy, Ryan Clark. That news made a lot of people happy, none more than Ryan Clark. But before we get to that, we got to talk about what we do on the show. We're going to talk about UFC 284. We tap in and tap out. I also spoke to Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovski together. We go face-to-face with those two. But Ryan Clark, big news, my friend, coming out of Vegas last weekend. As you head into a big weekend at the Super Bowl, how's everything going, my guy?
Man, this is another Super Bowl, DC. What are you talking about? I get two Super Bowls in 2 weeks, bro. Conor's coming back, and we get Philly, Kansas City. You know what happened? The sports gods were looking down on me, and they said to themselves, we want to make Ryan happy. And he reached out and touched Dana White and said, Dana, do this for Ryan. And he did. And you gave me the two number one seeds in the Super Bowl. I just couldn't be happier. Trying to figure out a way that me and Jordan can get into the tough house for some of this filming. And we'll see if we can make it work.
Hey, bro, let me tell you something. You and Jordan be just like praying for stuff to happen in sports. And now he got Izzy back last week. You get Conor back this week. Y'all just getting blessed over and over again. But you are heading out to the Super Bowl. That's why we are on today on Monday. Ryan, I could have went to the Super Bowl, but as a kid from Louisiana, I never thought I would turn it down. But my daughter has a national gymnastics competition in Orlando, so I am choosing to go with Marquita, right? So it's more important for me to go watch her compete. But the Super Bowl, big week for you in the NFL. Big week for the UFC as we go UFC 284. But before we get to that, RC, and before we get to those guys in the main event later in the show, Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler are not only fighting, they're coaching the Ultimate Fighter. But here's where it tells you how big Conor is. Conor's not coaching the Ultimate Fighter just on ESPN Plus. They're going to run this Ultimate Fighter on ESPN. He goes linear. Conor McGregor gets linear television with the Ultimate Fighter. How big is this for the sport to have that reality show on ESPN and on ESPN Plus?
Bro, you can't put it into words or measure what Conor McGregor means to the UFC from a sense of publicity, but also when you look at marketing and actual success and ratings. And ESPN understands that. ESPN ain't new to broadcasting sports, and they understand how Conor McGregor moves the needle. And if you're Dana White, if you're the UFC, this is why Conor McGregor seems to have different rules when it comes to the fights that he's able to get, the cards that he's able to headline based on where he is in his career and winning. And when Conor McGregor comes back, the UFC elevates, and we're going to see it not only elevate in the sense of the pay-per-views of this fight versus Michael Chandler, but also what ESPN is able to do with the Ultimate Fighter. And just the excitement that's already surrounding this lets you know why ESPN made this decision, DC. But I want to ask you this question. We saw the video of the guy that was basically like, man, I'm coaching against a UFC Hall of Famer. How in the hell am I supposed to win this wrestling match? But when you think about Conor and Michael Chandler as coaches of the Ultimate Fighter, who you picking as the best coach?
I would probably say in terms of coaching Michael Chandler, because he was in the college wrestling world, he was wrestling under a coach like that. Conor never did those team sports all the way up through college. But I think for as important as Michael Chandler can be to the young athletes as a wrestling guy, a coach, I believe that for him it's more important to understand and try to prepare himself to deal with the mind games. He is going to be under constant attack by Conor McGregor. And Ryan, I'm telling you, it is not a week. It's not 2 weeks. It's 6 weeks with someone that you are going to fight with. And for the annoying guy, me, I tried to poke at Stipe. Conor was poking at Uriah Faber the whole time. Even though they weren't fighting, he managed to cause such a dissension in that team that TJ Dillashaw, who wasn't even the coach against him, left Alpha Male because he was convincing Uriah that he was a backstabber. Just, he's going to be under constant attack from McGregor, and he can't allow for McGregor to get into his head too much. But we did feel like this would be the fight. You and I have talked about it for a while. Chandler is a good style matchup for McGregor, and I think that it works. And I think that Chandler's the right dance partner for the return.
DC, you know what I like about this is these two dudes, though it's going to be an extremely exciting fight, couldn't be different humans. It is literally impossible to dislike Michael Chandler. If you dislike Michael Chandler, I question your character. Right? This dude is an amazing fighter, an amazing father, amazing husband, like loves everybody, no hate in his blood at all. And then I don't have to explain to you who Conor McGregor is. And so I think that that's a super cool, you know, added characteristic that this show can have. But let's get away from the matchup of the coaches, the matchup of the fighters, and just talk simply from an MMA UFC point of view, DC, as someone who's been in that octagon, who calls fights now, who is so much intertwined in what the UFC is, how big of a boost or how important is it that Conor McGregor has returned?
You know, it's a massive boost for the sport in general. The Ultimate Fighter could not have gotten anything better, because even when Dana announced last year that the Ultimate Fighter was coming back, it was met with a very tempered reaction, because it was, well, the show's been going for so many years. What can they do to make it different? How does it do better? And then we had the coaches last year were, who were the coaches last year, Jake? Somebody whispered in my ear who the coaches were on last year's season of the Ultimate Fighter.
Amanda Nunes, Juliana
Pena. Amanda and Juliana, right? So it's like that, right? So it's like even that, me having the question, well, who were the coaches on The Ultimate Fighter last year, it was very tempered. But when you get Conor McGregor, when you get the biggest star in the game, and he's saying, I'll do Vegas for 6 weeks, I'll coach these kids against Michael Chandler, it is a massive boost. And I can only imagine the conversations and the back and forth that had to go into making this happen. Ryan, you know, very few people understand, like, when you go to coach the Ultimate Fighter, some people in the beginning got cars. You might have got a car. You might have got like an Escalade. Josh Koscheck got like a brand new Range Rover. You get these things. I got money. I'd rather the cash. You know, I'm from Louisiana. But it's like you don't know what you're going to get. But could you imagine what you have to give Conor McGregor to draw him into doing the Ultimate Fighter? Or do you believe Conor just did it like, you know what, man? I want to make a big statement in my return, and this is the best way to do it, being in front of everybody for 6 to 8 weeks right before the fight.
I think the big thing with Conor now is he has to remind everybody again before the fight. Mm. A lot of times it's just about the buildup to the fight, or we already know so much about Conor McGregor that we're drawn in already. And it's the Dustin Poirier matchup in his last two fights. So it was kind of that bad blood there. It was a rematch coming into fight two. Conor was being nice Conor. Then he turned back into evil Conor. So you had all of these other pieces going into those fights. You don't really have that with Michael Chandler. What you have with Michael Chandler is the expected excitement of what's going to happen in the octagon when these two meet. But Conor's been away for a while. He doesn't get that buildup that we had with Jose Aldo, or it isn't the following that he built headed into that fight. So this is different. So for 6 weeks on, like you said, linear TV on the big network, we're not even putting this on ESPN2 or something like that. You get to see Conor McGregor again. You get to see him in his fullness. You get to see him as a coach. You get to see him as a man. We're going to see certain things when he's explaining to guys how to throw that left hand or what's the perfect kick. And it's going to start to remind you and give you that nostalgia of, oh, yeah, that's who Conor McGregor is. Oh, yeah, that's why we fell in love with him. And so I think it's a smart, strategic, and marketing move by Conor to say, nah, I'm not just proper whiskey anymore. Like, I'm still that dude that all of you people grew to love. But speaking of a dude that we all love and someone that used to strike fear in the hearts of his opponents in the octagon, Derek Lewis lost again to Sergey Spivak this weekend. And I remember last week, DC, we were talking about tapping in or tapping out on Derek Lewis being able to win this fight. And I said, I don't think he can win it, DC. I believe he's done. And your response to me was, I don't know if Spivak is that guy to do it. And now we see him submitted early on in this fight. In watching Derek Lewis, DC, was any part of you saying, you know what? This might be time to stop.
It's hard, right, Ryan? Because you and I were talking about this last week, and I spoke about how you speak so freely because you have no relationships to kind of like keep in the sport, right? So it's very refreshing to walk like that. Whereas Derek Lewis and I are buddies after we fought.
Right.
And even last week when I said, I think he's done at the top, but I don't know if he still can't beat these types of guys. He came back at me, threw an insult at me, and was just very sensitive. But come to find out, I might have been giving him too much credit. And that's sad, right? Like, that's a sad thing that I might have been giving him too much credit, because I was saying maybe he can't beat 5-1 anymore. But 7-15, he can still get those guys. But not only did he lose, he got wiped out. He got wiped out. And now he has lost to Ciryl Gane, where he got stopped. He got stopped by Tai Tuivasa. He got stopped by Pavlovic very early. And now he got stopped by Sergey Spivak. And stopped in a way that led fighters to go publicly and question whether or not he tried. That, to me, is very telling, Ryan. And that is the only time in which I question whether or not it might be time, because it just seems like that fire isn't burning inside of him as it used to, because he gets stopped in a certain way, and now he's getting submitted by guys that a couple years ago, man, that dude would not have gotten to Derek. I mean, you got to remember, Derek Lewis knocked out Curtis Blaydes whenever he still cared as much about this thing as he did back then. So, yes, Ryan, in a moment, I thought, wow, maybe it's time for Derek to walk away, especially if that fire doesn't burn in you anymore. You can't hide that. You can't, like, fake the fire to go into an octagon and fight someone.
You know what, DC? Whenever I think of Derek Lewis now, and I hate the fact that I watch so many movies and they pop up in my head, I think about Rocky when he was fighting Ivan Drago. And even though Derek Lewis had losses, they were to the top guys. You know, it was you finding a way to get Derek Lewis to the mat and submitting him. And so it wasn't ever like guys walk through his punches. You know, we didn't see dudes do to Derek Lewis what we saw Tai Tuivasa do to Derek Lewis. You didn't see guys do to Derek Lewis what we saw this weekend with Sergey Spivak, because there was so much fear. You just were so scared that he would catch you with one of those strikes and the night would end right there. And then I remember when Rocky finally cut Ivan Drago, he was like, he's just a man. See, he's bleeding. He's just a man. Once guys realized that Derrick Lewis had finally aged or gotten to the point where he was just a man, now skill was the ultimate equalizer in all of his fights. And people were more skilled than Derrick Lewis. And if you were more skilled and you also weren't afraid of being knocked out anymore, the fights got quicker and quicker and quicker. And he was put out because he didn't instill that fear and then didn't have the skill to fall back on in any other way. Someone who a part of this sport had more skill, more fear in MMA or instilled more fear than anyone was Fedor Emelianenko. And I became a Fedor fan, and don't say nothing crazy, DC, because Fedor is Troy Polamalu's favorite fighter. And I always thought that it was Troy's favorite fighter because their bodies kind of looked alike and they were like the ultimate. They were the greatest in the sport. Fedor fights this weekend and loses and then announces that he's retiring. In your opinion, is he the most dominant MMA fighter of all time?
You know why I smile at you, first off, before I go on there? Like, you really have come far. Like, you talk about the Derrick Lewis thing, and I'm smiling because I'm like, look at my guy, man. Look at my guy, man. So, like, you've come far, bro. Like, seriously. That was a great, like, you're getting really, really good. You're getting really, really good. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, dog.
When I think of Fedor, I think of back in 2007, 8, 9, that scary guy, the Russian who barely spoke. He was quiet. He was like a mythical monster that would show up and he would just beat everyone. But I think for Fedor, I think he is Fedor is the story of aging fighters who don't get out when they possibly probably should. He's 46 years old. He's fighting Ryan Bader. He gets just demolished. And then you start to forget about all the great memories that he had, because all you remember lately is what you're seeing. And what you're seeing is what you saw last weekend. I think that the myth of Fedor is bigger than what he is in mixed martial arts history. It's the lore. It's the tall tale. I don't believe he's the greatest heavyweight of all time. I think that belongs to Stipe Miocic, but only because Cain Velasquez was injured so much. I think in terms of skill, there is no one that ever matched Cain Velasquez as a heavyweight. But I believe that Stipe Miocic in the title defenses, in the long reign that he had atop the division, puts him atop. But Fedor is in the top five. And I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of.
You know, when I think about Fedor, his run from, what was it, like 2000 or 01 to like 2009, 2010, was one of those runs that builds that myth. But it was always crazy to me that he was that quiet guy. He didn't necessarily have this body or bravado of someone you looked at as a killer, but he just couldn't be beaten and wasn't beaten. And then when he became more mainstream to us, when it was more, now we could see Fedor Emelianenko, he wasn't what he was then. So to many of the masses, if you aren't an MMA fan who will dive into old videos on YouTube or who was around during that time and understood who Fedor was, you never got to see him at the top. And I think that's the big difference between him and a Stipe Miocic, who, when we saw him at the top, when he was part of the consciousness of the MMA world and UFC and beyond, that's when we saw him at his best. And I do believe that that changes the perception of a fighter as it goes into greatest of all time, best of all time, top heavyweights in the world, which Fedor definitely was. But speaking of top fighters in the world and speaking of greatest of all time, we get an opportunity to see Alexander Volkanovski and Islam Makhachev face off this weekend. And this is for best right now. This is for pound number one. You had an opportunity to speak to both of these men over the weekend, DC. what stuck out to you about their interactions?
Confidence. It was both of these guys are extremely confident. And Alexander Volkanovsky carries a chip on his shoulder that he will try to use to propel him. Because I understand more than ever, Ryan. So there's these websites, and they put a quote out every week. And the quote yesterday said, the quote of the day was, I've always had a chip on my shoulder. It kind of drives me. It's something that allows me to train harder, train longer, and work better. So just that chip, that was something I said over the course of my career. And as I talk to them, it feels like Volkanovski's carrying that same chip that they say I'm too small. They say I can't go with that guy. They say I can't beat this guy. He's unbeatable. And he's carrying that into the fight. But you know what was funny about the conversation was as Alex was talking and Alex was explaining why he is who he is, the whole time Islam smiled. It's like he was hearing the funniest thing he'd ever heard in his entire life. He didn't really, you could tell he takes him serious, but the things Volkanovski were saying is something he's heard so much that he's almost immune to, oh, this guy's going to be different than the last guy, because they all say it, but none of them can actually do it. It was very interesting. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, you know, I think that's what's so crazy about these two dudes is they both should be ultimately confident, right? Nothing about their recent stretches inside the octagon says that they are going to lose or that they've even been close to losing. If you go Ortega, Max Holloway, Korean Zombie, like if you're Volkanovski, like it doesn't matter. You're always fighting people who are at least taller. And then you think about what Islam Makhachev was able to do to Charles Oliveira, who was running through the best of the best at 155 pounds. You say, shoot, can't nobody beat me either. And so I think you're seeing two guys who aren't just confident because they need that for bravado. They're confident because of what they've been able to accomplish in the octagon. And so I'm extremely excited for this fight. I want to see how Alexander Volkanovski can find ways to get off of the ground when Islam Makhachev takes him down. I also want to see how Islam handles the movement, the ability to get in and out that we've seen from Alexander Volkanovski in every one of his fights that we've witnessed. And so this is a very exciting fight to me, and I think it's big for the UFC. After sitting down with these guys, DC, and knowing everything that you know about them, their ranks within the UFC, what does this fight mean for the UFC as a whole, and what does the winner of this fight become?
You know, Ryan, the winner gets the ultimate bragging chip. He'll be the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And if Alexander Volkanovski wins this fight, he keeps his position, but he beats the guy that people think. It's like, hey, that Ivan Drago analogy you made earlier. Islam is that, right? The unbeatable, the guy that's supposed to be only human. Volkanovski gets to show he's only human. He's just a man like the rest of us. Volkanovski gets the ultimate bragging rights if he beats Makhachev, because he's already the pound-for-pound number one. But for Makhachev, he goes on the top of those rankings. He sits in a place where he has sat and watched many of his teammates go to before myself, Habib, all become number one pound-for-pound over the course of our careers. So that stuff means something to those guys. It is a massive fight in terms of the stakes, a massive fight in terms of the standing in the world, and a massive stakes fight for two of the most important weight classes we have had for a long time in the UFC. Long have people thought featherweight and lightweight are the two deepest weights we have in the UFC. This weekend, we get those two champions fighting each other to ultimately prove who is the best. It's as important as it gets, Ryan. I'm all in. I love it. Lil Daniel is so excited. He's like, Dad, let's just make sure Saturday night, wherever we're doing in Orlando, we're back in the hotel so we can watch the Makhachev fight. Then we get into the Super Bowl the next night. Dude's all excited about this fight weekend and football. It's crazy.
Well, first off, I just think it's awesome, man. You get an opportunity to go watch your daughter compete and also spend that time with Lil Daniel watching two sports that you guys love. I think aside from being a Hall of Famer inside the Octagon, you're a Hall of Fame father too, man, and that's so important. But you mentioned yourself and Khabib Nurmagomedov being two guys who reach pound for pound number one. Another thing that Khabib had become one of the best to ever do was coach, was lead Islam Makhachev inside the Octagon. And so I can remember hearing him explain to Islam or take Islam step by step through ways of submitting Dan Hooker, if you remember back to that, and watching Islam listen to those things and eventually get the submission. What is it going to mean, or how will it affect Islam not having Khabib Nurmagomedov in his corner for this fight against, like you have already said, the pound for pound number one in the world?
You know, RC, it's like Khabib was playing a video game. It was like he was explaining, like he was holding a controller with Islam Makhachev as the character that he was using as he got that submission. But I think he's come to terms with it. I think Islam's come to terms with it. I haven't had an opportunity to ask him about it, but everything I see publicly, everything I see him say tells me that he's come to terms with, now I have to go and compete without my guy. And although it sucks, it does happen, right? We have been in situations before where we've had to go fight without each other, or you got to fight without this guy or this guy. It just kind of happens. And I believe that Islam has many great coaches. He's got many great training partners, people that are going to be there to support him. And he's going to need it because he's going into enemy territory to try and beat the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. But Ryan, as big as this fight is this weekend, it's not the only championship fight, because Alexander, as he goes up, he leaves his division without a champion to defend the belt. The UFC has now booked Josh Emmett and Yair Rodriguez for the interim title. You got the powerhouse in Emmett, the guy who has the wrestling skill but tends to love the knockout, and you have the dynamic fighter that is Yair Rodriguez. What do you think about this matchup, and how exciting are you about those guys being the appetizer to the main event, the big-time thing that happens right before the main event hits the Octagon? What's your feeling about this fight and how they match up?
Well, I think I'm excited because these two dudes are so different. If you go back to Yair Rodriguez's fight against Max Holloway, he turned Max into a grappler, which is something we don't normally see. And then you look at Josh Emmett versus Calvin Kattar and the way he was able to continue moving forward, inflict enough punishment, but also control the octagon and find a way to get the decision at the end of that fight. I want to see which man's style overtakes the other guy. Can Yair and his strikes from all different angles, the unorthodox kicks and movement, overpower Josh Emmett, who's more straight line, come right down the pipe and try to inflict his physicality on the opposite fighter? And so this is going to be as exciting because of how dynamic both of these men can be as it will be strategic in watching them kind of feel each other out and figure out the best way to go on the attack. It's one of those things, DC, and I can be honest to you about this. I have to look at the fight singularly as opposed to holistically. Because in my mind, right, in my mind, I'm saying this because I believe what Yair gets here because Brian Ortega gets hurt while they're grappling, hurts his arm or whatever it was, shoulder, is
yeah.
It's hard for me to not look at this fight and think to myself, well, Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway are the two premier featherweights in the world. And even though that these two men are fighting for the interim title, these are not the two best fighters in the division. And so once I've reconciled myself to that, I can enjoy it for the explosive, stylistic matchup it is, and I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited about the fight. I'm excited about new guys to challenge Alexander Volkanovski. That's where my excitement lies tonight. I'm excited about the matchup because I've known Yair since he was on The Ultimate Fighter Latin America in season one, and he was not the guy that he is today. He has improved so tremendously. And I'm telling you, Josh Emmett has gotten so much better. And this is a guy that has done everything needed to earn a championship opportunity but just kept falling short, or he didn't seem to be the sexy challenger. Sometimes you got to be sexy. Mm-hmm. You got to be sexy. You got to have something that pops
sexy,
off the page.
DC.
Hey, bro, I'm trying to tell you, I'm a gay. You already know. I don't want to. Hey, this face right here, boy. This face right here. But you got to have something that draws people in. And maybe many didn't feel like Emmett had that. He finally gets his opportunity. And I'm so excited about it, man. I cannot wait for this weekend. It's going to be a fantastic card from Australia. But, Ryan, before we get to everything else in the show, we got to tap in and tap out. It's time.
You
got to tap in and tap out. Let's go, Jake.
All right, guys, Dana White over the weekend announced that Sean O'Malley has signed a new 8-fight contract. As one of the sport's rising stars and with the number one next to his name, RC, tap in or tap out, O'Malley will be a champion within the first 3 fights of his new deal.
Ooh, that's tough. I tap out. I tap out because of the people I'm thinking to myself Sean O'Malley will have to face. When I go back to that Piotr Jan fight, he showed he belonged. He showed he was a top 5 fighter. Aljamain Sterling being there now. Henry Cejudo possibly being an opponent. And their experience, their ability to grapple, their ability to wrestle and kind of negate some of the things that Sean does well, I believe it'll be difficult for him to beat those guys. So that's the only reason I tap out. But I can say this. If he pulls it off with that dynamic striking, I won't be surprised.
I tap out because of the time frame. It's just very fast. Like 3 more fights, that's not that long to elevate yourself to a championship. Now, he's number one, I get it. That's why we imagine it could happen. But he's number one because he beat Piotr Jan. He went from 10 to 1, and many thought that he lost the Jan fight. So I'm going to tap out for those reasons, but I would not be surprised if somewhere down the line, Sean O'Malley does become a UFC champion. But Sean O'Malley gets a new contract every single time he fights. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
All right, guys.
Like Daniel Cormier.
Recently, RC was a guest on the Brilliantly Dumb Show podcast and had this take on ice cream.
Ice cream is just a dessert side.
Yeah.
I'm a hot dessert guy, right? So I don't.
So you're saying ice cream can't stand alone, Ryan?
Ice cream cannot stand alone.
Oh, I don't think that's fair.
That's preposterous.
So think about this. I got the pie brownie with the ice cream with it.
Oh, that's a great play. The a la mode is a great play.
So, DC, tap in or tap out. That ice cream is a dessert side.
It's a dessert side.
If I'm being completely honest with you, I don't disagree with Ryan as much as people are trying to make it seem. Just because you do have the pie with the ice cream, you get the hot brownie with the ice cream, everything that, all those desserts that are hot, they stick the ice cream on top of it. So I don't disagree with them as much as most people, but you can eat a good ice cream by itself. You can't have a bowl of ice cream. I mean, dude, even on the airplane, they give you ice cream. It is a dessert, Ryan.
DC, here's why I tap out. Think about this. Now, if your ice cream is a snack, I agree with that. Ice cream is a snack. Mm. But I tap out on ice cream being a dessert because of this. You eat a dessert after you eat a meal. A lot of times, if you're going to your refrigerator to get ice cream, you're just sitting on your couch and you might be watching a fight. Yeah, so like, I want a bowl of ice cream. You right? But if I'm at a restaurant and I'm eating food, and I just finished my entree, I don't normally say, hey, you got a cup of ice cream? It's give me the bananas Foster, give me the bread pudding, give me the brownie. And with that, they bring the ice cream out because it's an add-on. It's a side. And a lot of times you might say, nah, you put the ice cream on the side of it because I don't want it on top of my warm cookie. Just saying, DC.
He makes a strong case. He makes a very strong case. Cover J, he makes a very strong case.
All right, guys, last one. With UFC 284 and the Super Bowl a day apart this weekend, if you were to place $100 on a parlay with both underdogs, Volkanovski and the Chiefs to win, you can walk away with close to $850. RC, tap in or tap out, risking a big payout on both underdogs this coming weekend.
Tap all the way in. I'm glad you told me that. What? This is... Bro, here's... Wow, that just blew my mind, Corp. For Jake, think about this. The people that we are calling the underdog and that you would have to bet money on to win big are both already champions, Jake and DC. You acting like KC don't have a ring with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. We acting like Alexander Volkanovski ain't just ran through everybody at featherweight. Jake, oh, yeah, somebody finna make them some moolah.
I tap out, man. I get what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is, for as great as they are, and they would beat 99.9% of the world, they're just in front of a team and a fighter that most believe that they can't beat. So I tap out. I'm not wasting my money on that. Because they're not both going to win. If one wins, okay, but not both. They're both not winning. Sorry, Ryan.
You know why you say that, DC? You say that because you don't believe that Volk can beat Islam Makhachev. I know in your mind, you already have your pick of why it can't happen, which is why it will happen. And when it does happen, DC, I'm going to FaceTime you octagon side. And when I do, answer. Pick it up, DC. Yeah. I want you to pick it up and show the world that me and you are on FaceTime then. You know, what I might not do is FaceTime you if Kansas City wins. But I think, like, the cool part about this Super Bowl, which I mentioned on Monday after the games and after the teams were set, was that in Black History Month, for the first time, we have two African-American quarterbacks that are starting this game. And I also pointed to both of their fathers. I pointed to Patrick Mahomes Sr. and also Avrion Hurts. And the reason I did that was because so often Black fathers aren't pointed to for helping their sons to success. Black fathers aren't pointed to for being in the house and continuing to help a young man become a man. It's often pointed when that Black man isn't in the house, right? It's often made a story when we could say this kid overcame the adversity of coming from a single parent home. Well, neither one of these quarterbacks had to do that. Neither one of these quarterbacks have had to live without seeing their father every day. And I spoke to Doug Williams over the weekend, who was the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl, and the sort of pride that he has in being able to always be associated with that. But now seeing the game progress to the point where we have two quarterbacks, I think that's a testament to these young men, a testament to their mothers and fathers and their support systems that have helped them get to this point. Also think it's a testament to the NFL, to coaches, to executives, finally starting to recognize the leadership skills that these young men can have, and also the talent and the brain, right? Because it was always said it didn't have the intelligence to play the position, giving these young men opportunities to prove it.
And that's for me, you know, I'm no insider, right? You and I just completely flip hats whenever we start talking football, because you're the guy that lived it. You're the guy that still lives it today. But for me, it wasn't hidden that the intelligence was always the factor as to why most of those black quarterbacks didn't get the position. They always had the athleticism. They always had the ability. But could they handle the playbook? I'm not even a guy that lived in the world, Ryan, but I would hear that. So that tells me that I was hearing that in public places. Can they handle the playbook? Can they handle all that stuff that comes with leading a team to a championship? We now have two young black men doing that right now, heading into the Super Bowl, come from families with strong role models, strong dads that took an interest, that took the, like us, Ryan, we want to be there as fathers for our children. So we give them an opportunity. Yep. They took the initiative to live the life that they want to give their children, and it shows. And I am so proud to watch these two men lead in the way that they lead as a black man, because it just gives me more hope that I'm doing the right thing for my son, to give him an opportunity to do something, whether it be sports or something completely different. I'm giving him a chance, just like those dads gave their boys, who are both now leading teams in the Super Bowl, Ryan. It's an absolutely amazing thing, my brother. And it makes me very happy to see.
Yeah, man, I just think it's so dope. And speaking of our opportunities to be fathers and give our kids these better opportunities, tell us a little bit, man, about your wrestling team over the weekend, DC, man. I heard y'all had some bumps early. It getting to where y'all had to go. But when y'all hit the mat, it was total domination.
Yeah, it was domination, man. Once we got to going, you know, we had some hiccups with some stuff. You know, youth sports, Ryan, can be ugly, man. And we had some anonymous people trying to say our kids did things wrong and didn't want them to get the opportunity. Ultimately, the right thing was done. My league they voted on letting our kids wrestle. My commissioner in my conference let the kids compete. My team will get some sanctions for some of the things that we didn't know or didn't recognize we were going to do. But you know what? It is what it is, because ultimately the kids get a chance. We scored almost 500 team points in that tournament. So the Gilroy Mustangs did a fantastic job and showed, Ryan, why they are champions. And I'm proud of them. Guys, Ryan and I want to thank you so much for supporting us as you have been doing since day one, maybe day two, because in day one, you guys really didn't support us all that much.
They didn't really know about me.
We appreciate you. They didn't know, RC. They know now, though. We love you guys for the support. We appreciate you. You find us every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcast. We're also on ESPN2, 12 midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific, every single Tuesday. But obviously, we're here today for DC and RC. But before we go, guys, I sat down with Islam Makhachev and Alexander Volkanovsky. And those guys were filled with confidence. And I loved being in between these two because, guys, there's so much greatness shared among them as they head into the main event of UFC 284. Take a listen to the interview in its entirety right now on DC and RC. Until next time, guys, peace.
We have the main event of UFC 284. We have Islam Makhachev. We have Alexander. Wait a minute, actually. I should be introducing Volkanovski first because he's the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. So we got Alexander Volkanovski and we got Islam Makhachev joining us, both from beautiful Australia. Fellas, how y'all doing?
We're good. I'm good. I'm very good.
Islam, you like that? Like, Volkanovski is number one pound-for-pound, so he should be introduced first, right?
Well, 155, bro. This is my jungle. He jumped to my jungle.
Okay. Boys, how's the preparation going? We are getting very close to fight night. Alexander the Great, you first? Like, how's the preparation going? How good do you feel as you head into this massive opportunity where you try to become double champ?
Well, that's exactly what it is. Massive opportunity. Obviously, camp, it's been a long one. A long camp. I've been training hard, obviously, the bulking and all that type of stuff, but everything's all coming together perfectly, you know what I mean? So now we're getting the weight where we want it. Now I'm as sharp as I am at featherweight, but as strong as I would be if I was a welterweight. So I'm very happy where everything is right now, and I can't wait to do work. Just around the corner. Only a couple more hard sessions. And we're ready.
Islam, what about you, man? How's training camp? How long have you been in Australia? I know you did the vast majority of the camp in Dagestan. Like, how long have you been there? How's the training been going?
Training going is good. I am more than almost 2 weeks here, but everything is same, just weather in Russia and Australia so different now. So hot place. And Sunday night is gonna be hot. Sunday morning is gonna be more hot.
So I get to this fight, right? I was in the octagon with you two, whenever Islam became the champion. They're both, you walked into the octagon next to him. And the first thing I thought to myself is, Alexander Volkanovski is not small.
No. When you drop the vacation,
you think you made a mistake?
I don't make mistakes.
Of course, brother, I didn't make a mistake for him. Because his teammate, Adesanya, jumped to the other way, showing him bad example. But he don't listen.
Volkanovski,
I don't make mistakes.
Champ, so like when I saw you, I said he's short, but he's not small, because in the octagon on that night, you look thick. You look big.
Brother, he wear big shoes always.
What's up with this guy?
You're giving away all my secrets now, mate. Now, but you're right. You're right. Obviously, we all know that, and I'm short. I've always been short. That doesn't matter. Everyone that I face is taller than me. For that to play a factor in this fight, it's just silly. I'm one guy that uses his height very, very well. And we all know when you're close to the ground, and it definitely helps you in the wrestling exchanges and getting back to your feet and all that type of stuff. So we can talk about short this, short that. We all know that's always good in these sort of circumstances. So people can say what they want. But obviously, you're right. When you see me then, obviously I still look thick, but I had plenty of time to bulk up that little bit more. So you're going to see me looking a little bit thicker. The weight would be exactly where we want to still be sharp, but that need to be bigger as well.
You know, I went into the same situation. People look at the visual and they think, oh, he's too small, but that's not necessarily the case. But when you stood in front of Islam for the first time, what were you thinking? Looking at him, he's a tall guy for the weight class. Looking at him, he's big. What was your initial thought standing across from Islam? And Islam, I have the same question for you.
Oh, mate, for me, I was excited. I absolutely loved it. Again, before the fight, I didn't know who I wanted, because I wanted to be active. As soon as they said they wanted me in Australia, and all, you couldn't take the smile off my face. You know what I mean? This is the perfect scenario for me. Not only fighting soon, fighting in Australia and all that. So as soon as I heard that, I was buzzing. And I was like, give me in there, please, give me in there. He goes, where is this short guy? Get this short guy. All right, get in there. I want to be in there. So. And mate, I absolutely loved it. You know what I mean? I look at every opponent the same. Obviously, I got respect for him now. That's why I prepare accordingly. He wants to say this is a mistake and short and all that type of stuff. Hopefully, he's in training actually really thinking like that, because he's going to be in for a root shot.
Islam, what was your thought when you stood across from Volkanovski for the first time? Because you guys, the size differential is real. Right, you did look a little bigger than him when you guys stood across from each other. What were you thinking when you saw the champ for the first time? Not only the champ, but the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world.
Just one thing, brother. I want to be pound-for-pound king. This is my new dream. This is my goal, you know. And I'm training so hard for this fight. I know Volkanovski not gonna be easy. That's why I spent 3 months for the camp, and I'm training so hard for this fight. I want to be powerful pound king, not just champ.
This expectation that you're going to dominate everybody, right? You are a massive favorite over Volkanovski. Like, What does that feel like to you to live up to that every time? Because at this point, you just became the champion. It's not like you defended the belt 10 times, but there is a massive amount of expectation for you to not only win, but dominate. And they're expecting you to dominate one of the greatest fighters in the world.
And a lot of pressure to it. A lot of pressure to it.
And I think pressure. All guys come to my division and I just want to, you know, show people my level. Somebody says it's gonna be hard or easy, but everybody know that my level, because all my last five or six fights, I show good performance and I finish all my opponents. That's why I'm gonna look for the finish always. And my goal, I want to knock you out.
I like it. That's what I mean. Do you want to stand up and try to fight? But we all know that again. We all know you want to back it. Yeah, but that's so good. I'm preparing accordingly. That's one thing that we know. I don't, as he said, he knows he's training hard. Obviously, he knows this is a tough fight for him. You know what I mean? They're not silly. They're smart. Yeah. They know what I'm capable of. They're going to prepare accordingly as well. I can see that he's obviously been training hard. He's got a couple of black guys right now. So I'm sure he's doing some rounds in and probably get passed up a bit earlier. So that's good. That's good. That's what I want to say.
But Volk, if he's getting touched up in the training room and he's telling you that he's going to stand with you, I mean, that's got to feel pretty good to know, especially after the performance you had against Max Holloway. I mean, you look as good as you have ever looked in your entire career. And sharp, you never get tired. You're as good on the feet as they come. Like looking at Islam with the black eye and everything, and him telling you, "Hey, I want to stand with you." Does that make you smile?
Holloway, very good boxer. You know, he have good boxing, but I'm different. I'm very good MMA fighter.
So he's calculated, and you sit there and you say, "I'll be so excited for the stand up." We all know that he's gonna want to shoot, and he's gonna, you know, do all that type of stuff, but he might be comfortable because he thinks I'm gonna be easy to take down, I'm gonna hold him down and all that. So I think he might be a little bit comfortable at the start. But what about if he doesn't? What if he can't hold me down? What if I bounce straight back up, or a stop, or a frame, or footwork's too much, he can't grab a hold? That's when you're gonna really see him start to panic. Before that, you might think it's smooth sailing, doing two things don't go to plan. But as long as that, we can talk all we want. Again, for me, I know what to expect. Again, I'm watching Islam. I watch all these fights. I know he's a great fighter. His last fight with Charles Oliveira, I expected him to win. So I'm expecting the same Islam that's always been there. So I've been preparing for a guy that I know what he's capable of. But just talking to Islam, whether he was saying things or whether he actually believes it's going to be that easy. Hey,
what do you expect next fight, Islam? Next fight?
Which one? The one that's coming? Is that
the next one?
I guarantee you're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to stand with me. And then we're going to really, what I love about it, I'm hearing a lot of people say your stand up is underrated and all that type of stuff. We'll find out.
Islam, but what is stand though?
We can stand, no problem. Hey. You talk like you knock out your old opponents.
Yeah, and that's all right, eh? That's all good.
Islam, you got a smile on your face the whole time. I don't understand why you're smiling. I mean, what if it doesn't?
I'm so excited and waiting, you know.
But what if it doesn't go according to plan, like Volk is saying? What if when you try to take him down, you can't take him down? What if you do?
One time, two time, three time, five time, 10 time. It's gonna be, brother. I'm gonna keep working, keep following my plan. And all of my opponents say, I'm gonna stop his wrestling. He's not gonna take me down. But brother, Australia don't have wrestling. That's why I don't care.
If
you're a good wrestler and you have good defense, you can go, brother. Olympic Games from Australia.
I was actually national champion, actually, to be honest.
He was national champion.
They have to compete in Olympic Games.
That's all right. As you said, it's MMA. Just got to remember, you've got a, we all know your hope is to try grab a hold of me and hold me down. But if that doesn't work in your favor, we know how uncomfortable you're going to be in the street.
Alex, you don't.
But again,
you don't think that he can stand with you for 25 minutes?
Oh, great. Yeah, I got you.
The thing is, that's what I said. He's very calculated.
He just said you think you're Muhammad Ali.
I think I'm Muhammad Ali. I just think the batting center is a great Volkanovski, right? I'm just happy. I know where I'm at. I'm confident in my ability. And that's that. I know I can strike. I know I put a puzzle in him. I don't care if he lands punches. I'm going to need more. You know, I'm going to keep working. I'm going to fight. I've got that fight IQ, especially no matter where the fight goes. That's what's made me who I am. You know what I mean? If you look at my career and you break it all down, it's the fight IQ. It's a never give it up, never backing down. It's so many layers. And you can say whatever you want. We all know. I know that he's not got a great wrestling, great jiu-jitsu and all that type of stuff. But what if his only one game plan doesn't go that way? Let's see how well rounded he is. That's what I'm trying to say. And I don't know. I'll find out. But I know I can deal with it. I can deal with it wherever it goes. I've proved it.
I can tell you, as a person that has trained with him and spent time with him for a long time, it's usually not one game plan. It's just that he's had to use one game plan. But it's something, let me ask you.
He doesn't need to use it. Ours is directly well. That's fine.
You have warm things in your mind, brother. This is not your area. This is my area. That's why it's so different.
When you don't think you already get to win.
And you're so.
I've trained with big guys all the time. I've trained with bigger guys my whole career. Always.
You cannot be big. You can be fat, but you cannot be big. You can be fat.
I don't need to be big. I want to be sharp. I want to be fast. I want that movement. Yeah, I want that movement. I want to, and like you said, Muhammad Ali. Going like a butterfly.
What do you think of Alexander Volkanovski? Because he's kind of prodded at you a little bit. He's prodded at you. He's going to tell you that he's going to beat you. Like, I can sense the confidence coming off of Alexander. And why wouldn't he be confident? All he has done is win his entire career. You two are telling
me. He put in his mind, he's going to take me down, I'm going to gear up. But he has to make some other plan too, you know. Because it's not same guys who take him down somewhere. All him. This is other pressure, you know, my style. It's so different. And it's not going to be same like his training, sparring partners or all these guys. It's so different.
Yeah. You just need to remember when we prepare properly. We break down positions, we break down things, we break down specific opponents. We don't just do jiu-jitsu, we don't just do this. We study, we know you're good, we know where you're good, we know where you're really strong. We're gonna give you that respect. But at the same time, you know, I'm gonna put myself and do the hard yards. That's why I'm DC, yes, you're saying that this isn't cockiness. This is confidence in my preparation. I always prepare for them. I'm always going to do that. And it starts by respecting your opponent and knows where this fight could go. You're mad if you think I haven't put myself in some of the worst positions. I've done, mate, I'm doing 35 minutes straight in bad position. As late stage submissions you can get with some of the best grapplers in the world.
We've seen, you know, if he's priority, we've seen you in Ortega match. We've seen you escape something that not many fighters would have escaped. And I feel that came down to the art and the unwillingness to give up. Most would have said in at back then.
Put yourself in that position and you learn a lot from that. So training from there on was obviously a whole nother level. We leveled up after that when it comes to submission and defense and all that type of stuff. Purely from being in that position and knowing what you're capable of. Again, I believe in myself. I know what I'm capable of. I don't even know what I'm fully capable of yet. I want to find out. That's why you said I take on these challenges. That's why you see me challenging myself. You see me doing these things. I think it can be done. I believe it. I'm going to go and try to take it. Again, Islam is a tough opponent. I know that, but I still want it.
You see, that's what I'm about. Last Holloway fight than you were the first two. But Makhachev, you continue to improve. But Alexander's stature, as a shorter guy, as a guy coming up in weight class, do you anticipate that being a little bit of an issue because it's a little harder to level change into a guy that's shorter. Alexander does have a wrestling background. Alexander does have a championship mindset and mentality. How do you do to Alex what you have done to so many? Because I have seen guys over the course of your career mentally check out when dealing with you. How do you do that to Alexander Volkanovski, a guy that doesn't seem like he's ever willing to quit on himself? How do you break him? How do you smash him?
Brother, you know, all day my opponents say, I'm going to defend something. But when they feel the power, the pressure, and they all give up, like my last time, last fight, what he said, I'm going to stop him, knock him out. But when he feels something, you know, and after first round, I give him some hard time, and he think, hey, I don't do feel this 5 rounds, and he give up. That's why, you know, this is not, I'm not like all fighters. I have different style. I have, nobody have like me style. I have different power. That's why when my opponents feel this, and they always did same things, they just give up and tap.
And
You think you can write Alexander Volkanovski give up Islam?
Of course. Why not?
That's something I actually agree with him when he talks about his other opponents feeling that stuff and then crumbling. So he's got to understand that I will not crumble. Like, you can bet, like, you can try, put me to sleep, kill me, whatever. All right, that's probably the only way you can stop me. Otherwise, I'm going to keep doing what I need to do. I'm going to fight for every single millimeter. That's the thing. That's just what I am, what I'm all about. Again, I ain't nothing special, but I put my ass in the gym and do what needs to be done time and time again. And now look where it's got me. And that mindset that I have, that mentality that I have, is why I'm in this position. That's why you see me being confident. Again, there's confidence here. You can see the respect I'm giving him. I'm telling you how good he is, why I'm preparing so hard. But that's why I'm confident, because I know I'm doing what needs to be done to try and take that nice shiny belt off him.
Champ, you are so confident going into this. Final word for Islam Makhachev before you guys are locked into the octagon this weekend. What do you want to say to him as the guy that's the holder of the belt in the weight class above you and the guy that seems to be another Russian machine just ready to dominate the lightweight division?
Let's get it. Let's go out there and put on a show and do what we've been saying we're going to do. He's gonna try and impose his will. I'm going to try and impose my will. And that just means it's going to be a fun pop for the fan. One thing I just really, really want to, again, I've enough respect for Islam. I just want to say to you, to your face, Islam, you know, make me one promise, and that's make weight comfortably and healthy, and then let's dance.
Islam, you have anything to say to the champ, the number one qualified fighter in the world? Hey, you're fighting for more than just defense of your title. You win this weekend, you will be ranked number one qualified in the world, joining many of the guys that have trained and lived at the American Kickboxing Academy. What will that mean to you? And what do you say to Alexander, especially as he leaves with, make sure you make the weight before we get locked in the octagon this weekend?
Brother, I don't have his weight problem. Don't worry. I am very excited, waiting for that moment. And, you know, after when I won my belt, I just don't want to, like, you know, defense, like, and when Alex jumped to the cage, and I understand it's gonna be new goal, new target. It's dream for all MMA fighters to be number one pound for pound king. That's why I understand what they mean, and I'm training so hard this camp, you know. That's why I'm very close and very excited.
Ladies and gentlemen, you don't get number one versus number two pound for pound very often. That is our reality going into UFC 284 this weekend as Islam Makhachev tries to keep his lightweight championship from Alexander the Great Volkanovski. Boys, you both seem to be living in beautiful palatial estates out in Australia right now. I wish I was there with you, but I will be tuning in, locked in on what promises to be one of the greatest fights of the entire year. Champ, thank you for joining DC and RC. I appreciate each and every one of you, what you do and what you are to this sport. Good luck. Enjoy the fight. And boys, just really tear it up out there this week.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.